Hello, you're listening to episode 51 of This Week with David Rovics, a semi-weekly podcast you can find wherever you get your podcasts, as well as on davidrovics.com/thisweek, where you can hear all the other 50 episodes I've done over the past year or so, and I hope where you can read about how you can support my podcasting, songwriting, touring, and recording efforts, which are entirely crowdfunded and dependent on your interest to continue to exist. You can also read about that part more directly by going to davidrovics.com/subscribe or by clicking on the CSA link at davidrovics.com, which stands for Community Supported Art. Okay, now this week's missive. I heard some professional musicians on a BBC program talking about how their feelings of self-worth and general contentment in life are directly related to whether or not they're working on a regular basis. By working, they mean playing music in front of an audience, which is what they all do to get by. They were specifically talking about taking time off from touring because of having babies and raising small children. There was a general consensus that while raising kids could be hard, they could deal with everything involved as long as they had access to the outlets of playing music regularly and sharing it with people now and then. I'm very familiar with this whole thing, being a professional musician with children myself. I took a year off from doing any long tours when my first child was born. At the time, I was probably more focused on the financially disastrous aspects of unpaid paternity leave, but the psychological ones were intense, too. It would have been too hard to ply all that apart from the emotionally overwhelming experience of raising a baby, but in retrospect, it becomes clearer that these are different things, separate reasons for feeling small and inadequate. If I had been one of the guests on that BBC show, I probably would have mentioned something about the cyclical nature of this self-worth phenomenon in the course of a typical year for a touring musician. I usually do long tours in the fall and spring, so it's right around February and August that I'm generally in peak panic mode, wondering if this next tour will be the last tour I ever do, since maybe it will only have 10 gigs in it and I'll return home with more debt than I left with. So far, most of the time, in the end, the tour pans out okay, at least since I stopped doing big driving tours around the US, where this was no longer reliably happening. But this time of year, in August, I'm often a bit of a mess, looking at the empty calendar for the next few months, knowing that on the first of each of these months, the landlord will be demanding that I legitimate my existence by forking over yet another hard-earned $1,200. Maybe, I always ask myself in August, it's time to consider another line of work. Actually, this summer, I'm fully engaged in another line of work, running a small cafe with my family, and it is so much more work than I ever thought about. I'm an espresso snob, and I like making good espresso drinks. My family is not big enough to satisfy my daily desire to extract a few more shots and foam at least a bit more milk than I can possibly consume in a day. So when my friend Meta suggested I bring my family to Denmark and run the cafe for a summer, I more or less jumped at the opportunity. I'm glad I did, but I was so naive. There's so much more to running a cafe than what happens, say, during opening hours. Shopping, cleaning, fixing broken appliances like espresso machines and keeping them running well, paperwork, complying with health and tax authorities, all kinds of stuff. And then there are those many wonderful suggestions from friends and customers that usually begin with, you should, as in, you should sell beer. Often it's a suggestion related to things that the cafe should sell that we're not allowed to sell because we don't have the right kind of license for that, such as alcoholic drinks or cooked meals. Other suggestions include things like, you should be open for longer hours, or you should advertise in the local paper. All these sorts of suggestions are very familiar to me in my life as a touring musician, too. They're just as common. You should play in that venue. They'd love you there. Who is they, exactly? The audience that was at the last gig the person went to at that venue, who they're assuming would show up for my gig there? Or is they the people who organized and promoted that gig, who probably had no association with that particular venue aside from the fact that they were using it to put on a show? Yes, I generally agree. I should play there. And I leave it at that. In the depth of August, I might be desperate enough to follow one of those suggestions. I have barely any gigs for the fall tour. Maybe they're right. I should just email this venue and see if they want to have me open for that guy. But it doesn't work that way, and I know it. I know a lot of things, because I'm an expert at this, even though in August I generally don't feel expert at much of anything. I'm trying to book a tour, but it's not really working. Maybe all these people who are on vacation are never really coming back from vacation. Maybe they're just pretending to be on vacation because they don't like me anymore. I wrote a song last week about the power of songs to win hearts and minds. I'm a firm believer, but I wrote the song because I was still stewing on a conversation I had with a radio journalist I used to admire who made dismissive comments about music and the role of people like me in public communication, such as radio news and information program. Just songs is the phrase that has been ringing in my head for about a year since that conversation with that particular radio host. So the song is a defensive song, a defense of what I do and why it can be such an effective means of communication. Probably I'm remembering that conversation so much lately because it's August and the fall tour is only in a very skeletal state of existence. Probably by next month I'll be feeling like the expert at public communication and popular education that I am. I am, I remind myself. This is why one of my songs is the centerpiece of Haskell Wexler's last documentary. This is why they use my songs as tools for teaching high school teachers in Germany and Sweden how to teach their students. This is why my songs appear in songbooks put out by the National Labor Federations of several countries. This is why the unions and political parties in different countries employ me on a regular basis for the purpose of educating and inspiring their members. Music is effective as a means of communication. My music in particular. I'll share a message, the sort of message I'm sure all kinds of people in the public communication fields get on a regular basis. I found it only hours after I finished writing the song about that conversation in one of the various inboxes that each of the social media platforms has. Here are a couple excerpts. Thank you for making music and getting the good message out. Your music taught me never to give up, no matter how hopeless things seem. Your music has gotten me through depression, protests that didn't go smoothly, and many other hardships I've faced. You're a beacon of hope to me, and even though we've never met, you've made a huge impact on me and my life. You'll always be my comrade. These sorts of messages help a lot, especially in August, because it's not enough just to write songs that I know are really well written and probably effective at what they're trying to do. It only begins to be enough when you can bring the song to an audience that is affected by it in the ways you intended. It's only culture when it's something people participate in together in the same physical location. That's when people get the feeling that they're in something together, when they're together, doing the same thing, such as singing. People know they're in a struggle together when they laugh at the same jokes and cry at the same sorrows and experience these things collectively. These kinds of things have been studied and proven to be true in peer-reviewed publications, incidentally. We are fundamentally social animals. We also hear differently and process information differently when the information is sung. The reason music has been used as a tool for inspiration and education and for fostering a sense of community over the course of millennia by every form of institution that's ever existed, from governments to churches to armies to labor unions, is because it's so effective. But for me to be effective, for me to have a chance at winning hearts and minds, at keeping people involved, to be able to share thoughts about tomorrow with people, I need an audience. Just as with a cafe that barely has any reason to exist from a financial standpoint, you should statements don't actually help. Yes, I'd love to be open longer hours and to hire more staff and to advertise in the paper. I'd love to do all those things as a musician too. This isn't how it works, though, in practical reality. Those staff need to get paid. Advertisements cost money. When this goes out on my blog and in podcast form, I'll undoubtedly get lots of well-meaning messages from people saying, if you come to my town, I'm looking forward to seeing the show, and you should check out this venue. Seriously, this is going to happen. Maybe those people aren't the ones who finished reading the column, but the messages will come. There will also, hopefully, be a few messages from people who are members of organizations that have budgets, who want to put together a paying gig for me somewhere, for a union, a political party, an art center, or some other kind of community group. Those are the messages that will once again restore my sense of self-worth, which is tied not just to being able to communicate well, but having access to people with whom I may communicate, in the same physical space, at the same time, somewhere in the world. There is probably a nagging concern, aside from the fact that it's August and all the good folks in Europe who will probably be putting on gigs in various places are still on vacation and haven't gotten in touch yet. Maybe a couple nagging concerns. One is that the social and political structures I used to rely on for touring in the U.S. have since collapsed three times, maybe four, depending on how you measure these things. In Europe, that hasn't happened. Things are much more consistent for many reasons. But the other thing that keeps me up at night is this terrible conundrum. I have noticed that when times are hard, when there are multiple massacres in one day, half the world is on fire and the other half is flooding, fascists are coming to power in major countries around the world, and so on. This is when a lot of people tend to stay home. People don't stick their necks out unless they're feeling optimistic, and at times like these, optimism is scarce. People stay home, which also means they don't go to concerts and they don't organize them. This is, fairly obviously, the opposite of what would be best for everyone. It is in these bleak times that people need community and music more than ever. They just don't tend to realize it. The choir actually needs to be preached to on a regular basis or it starts singing out of tune. It's not just about winning the hearts and minds of fascists and lemmings, but about dreaming of a better world. And to dream, you must sing. But if that singing is going to involve me, you need to do more than share this message on social media. You need to be involved with an organization or other actual, real social network, not one that calls itself a social network, but which is actually a social network. And then you need to use this social network to do things like organize events that I sing at. Drop me a line. I'll see you in the streets and in the living rooms. If you'll gather round me, friends, well-kept ones and split ends, I can tell you about some people who I might have known. They woke up one morn, several nursing their newborn in a little town of earth and stone. As they were waking up, pouring kettles into cups, making fires to prepare to break their fast. The last most of them had seen of the 115 villagers who died beneath the blast. Though I never met the people killed by that fighter jet, I couldn't leave their memories behind. Thus when I am asked why I embrace the task of making songs that we all just give away, I'm busy making ends meet, but I'm not yet on the street, and after almost every concert that I play, when I sing about the moment when rising from their torment, 100 years ago they shut the city down. If you weren't in the strike, you might imagine what it was like, the precipice of possibility that seemed to grip the whole town. I think I can remember, make a fire from an ember, and I think that's true of all of humankind. It may be that songs can't change the world, but they can win hearts and minds. Because if there's a location, but it's not your destination, then you'll probably never travel there at all. If you let me paint a picture within the confines of these strictures of what it's like to be looking at that wall, surrounded by the tanks among the angry soldiers' ranks, as an old woman walks to the checkpoint with her shopping bags. If you didn't see the look in her eyes as she shook when the soldier dumped them out and laughed loudly as he bragged that if anyone assisted, then they have just resisted, and if they tried, they'd meet a fate in kind. Maybe that songs can't change the world, but they can win hearts and minds. If this is the case, transcending class, gender, race, if this is a way we all might communicate, what else is there to do than to take the cue and do what I can to disseminate the notion that we all are just circling the star together in our place of birth. On the same course, sharing the same resource that many of us call the planet Earth. Whether I'm playing at the troubadour or on the cafe floor, I'll never stop as long as I still find. It may be that songs can't change the world, but they can win hearts and minds. It may be that songs can't change the world, but they can win hearts and minds. This has been episode 51 of This Week with David Rovics. If you live in the US, Canada, or Europe, and might like to organize a stop on my Songs for Today World Tour, which will be taking place through much of the autumn, please drop me a line at david@davidrovics.com.